Hey, White Sox fans, the Rep Valentini here, getting to host a very special gallows humor edition of the Southside Sox podcast. It is number 43, but first in the RIP category, hang another uniform in the dugout. Luis Robert, that Pantera is broken. Unfortunately, Joe Reeses, it maybe is his fault. He's joining us here. Super Joseph Reeses broke the news for us on site. Coming out of that Rick Hahn news conference this evening that told us really not only that the Pantera would be out potentially the entire year with a torn hip, he's broken, but Adam Engel had a setback that no one was aware of, and he's just still not going to play. By my calculations, that means it's almost assured that 72% of our starting outfield starts will not happen this year. So we're already at about, best case scenario, a quarter of our starting outfield will start this year. So with me, we have Crystal O'Keefe and Super Joseph Reeses, 100% once again, attendance from the Indianapolis field office of Southside Sox. Straight out of the Southeast now, it's Tommy Barbie. And of course, Colleen Sullivan reporting from the cave. Apparently there's a snake attack going on somewhere in the household. The little Pantera's after, no, okay.
Little Pantera's after the snake that's on the porch.
All right, snake attack on the porch. Appropriate for a day like today. Well, we got the terrible news, obviously. And we've, I think I even admitted to you guys as we were discussing the breaking news that I was actually nervous to hear this information as if I was going to be public speaking somehow, because I don't know if it was a sense that it was going to be devastating news or the fact that they were calling a press conference is very ominous. And I just thought, wow, he is not going to play again this season. You guys, reactions, anything different or anyone optimistic among the crew?
Well, like having watched the game yesterday and watching like how he went through the bag and then how he reacted, I honestly thought he broke his ankle. And when they're, oh, he just pulled his hip. I'm like, there's more going on, because with how he went down and how he was not getting back up, I'm like, did he dislocate his hip? Like, it felt like there was going to be more that was coming out anyway. So I'm not that surprised. I'm more surprised that Adam Engel had a setback at this point. Because I also was wondering if he died in the same accident as Eloy. Because we haven't heard anything about him.
Yeah, like in solidarity, he was going to maybe take some of those left field starts. So it's like, hey, I'm just going to go down with you. Yeah, for a guy who made, he tweaked it sort of like making a throw or not even his most spectacular catch by any stretch. And yeah, he's essentially 6 feet under at this point.
Maybe he sees that there's like a dumpster fire and he's like, you know what? I'm still not okay, guys. I need to take some time.
Yeah. My other dumb calculation, because I'm just throwing stats out, apparently, because I guess I'm the stats guy. Come on, Super Joe, step up. It appears now that, again, sort of best case scenario, and that includes what we would have expected Engel to start. Already, 27% of the starts we would have counted on from our core starting lineup, and that includes Grandal being all banged up and not, for some reason, getting only two-thirds of the available starts. Tim Anderson, of course, his yearly injury maybe has already happened or maybe still got another one. 27% of the starts we would have expected already out the door. And that's best case scenario. If no one gets hurt the rest of the way, we're already out about a quarter of what we would have expected from this vaunted offense. And again, reactions from any of the rest of you.
Earlier, you had asked if any of us were feeling optimistic. As far as looking at this season from, and really this team's future from a macro perspective, I'm still fairly optimistic about it. I mean, the Twins have gotten off to a cold streak, which I certainly didn't expect. And obviously, I certainly didn't see your mean Mercedes's breakout coming at all. And that certainly helped in a big way, and has certainly helped cushion the blow of losing Jimenez, of course. As far as just the near future, though, we're looking at it from a micro perspective. I'm still very sad, obviously, and I'm not looking forward to the next couple of weeks. As there's pretty much no doubt that we're going to see a lot of Jake Lamb, Billy Hamilton, and Leury Garcia, as now they have even more reason to get playing time. And that just isn't really ideal. And I anticipate being a little bit antsy seeing in anticipation of what the front office is going to do to address this gap.
Oh God, this gets scarier. Joe, all right, let me terrify you. You're looking too smooth and too optimistic right now. You name check your mean, who's been great, but he's played 1 month of baseball. Adam Eaton has been playing out of his head. Yoan Moncada has been great for the team. Okay, we would have expected that. Tim Anderson has been terrific in limited time. Nobody else. I don't know who is. At this point, they're all dying, so nobody can step up. Luis Robert was having a dynamite year, fulfilling your preseason prediction of best White Sox position player of all. But even the guys who are doing well, Yermina's carried this team, and he's a guy who wasn't on the team last year.
That is true. You did. I don't believe you mentioned my guy, Nick Madrigal, though. He's. I think he deserves a mention as someone who's played well enough for the team. He's recovered since that first road trip of the season where he was very bad, admittedly. But since then, I've really enjoyed what I've seen from him. But yeah, that is true. Certainly some reasons to be concerned. And yeah, really would be helpful to have Jose Abreu hit the ball again. And because obviously it was a very rough first few weeks for him. And having him recover would go a long way.
Are we sure that Jake Lamb didn't do some kind of Tanya Harding thing to Luis Robert? Did he loosen the bag somehow?
It's not like he needed to do anything.
You never know. He just wasn't sure. He wanted that extra playing time, even though Tony's going to give it to him anyway. He just had to be sure.
He read everyone's tweets.
Yeah,
constantly. I will say, and I don't know who I can credit, because I was just doom scrolling on Twitter earlier, but someone pointed out, you know, if it wasn't for all of these injuries, we would not have Yermin right now. So it's kind of one of those, let's try to stay optimistic on who the next man up is going to be and who's going to come in and be Mercedes number two. I don't remember who even tweeted that out, because everything is just a blur right now. But I'm trying so hard to think there's another guy that's going to come in and he's going to actually do something. Who knows?
Is it going to be Tommy's guy, Mick Rodolfo?
Yeah.
Mick Rodolfo right there.
That's the scary thing. Okay, again, let me throw some stats at you, because apparently that's my thing. We're 1/6, we're exactly 1/6 of the way through the season. The guys we're counting on to fill in here, Andrew Vaughn, baseball reference wise, projected 0.6 war. Billy Hamilton, somehow we're counting on him now. He's a core player, 0.6 war. Nick Williams, of course, gone, sort of. He's somewhere. In his limited time, he did only the damage of minus 0.2 war. Jake Lamb, zero. Leury Garcia, zero. A guy who actually performed well, Danny Mendick, was on track for three war. He's starting in Charlotte. Again, Adam Eaton, a guy who's projected for three war right now, you would not have expected, and Lord knows he's going to, his knees and shoulders and head are already buckling, right? Every other play in right field. It seems like it's only a matter of time. So yeah, why not Mike Rodolfo? Because Blake Rutherford, Luis Gonzalez is going to get first shot. Second half will probably be where we start to criticize perhaps once again, because it's very tedious to do so, but the off season, because that's why we're in this pickle. And I know, Brett, they're 15-12, shut up. They're in second place. Well, with every one of these moves, the Kansas City Royals get closer to somehow stealing the American League Central this year. And it's great that Joe thinks that the Twins are doing terrible. They're crappy. So, you know, it's going to be handed to us, but somebody, a life raft, please send one out.
I don't hate Billy Hamilton as much as everybody else.
Hey, I don't hate him at all. He's good. I mean, but now he's a core guy.
I know, right. Like, that's really all I have to say about that. Like, I don't hate him as much as I hate everybody else.
A fair assessment. All right.
Maybe they'll bring Danny back up. Like, that's my only life raft at this point. Please bring him back.
Like, I agree with that. I'm confused as to why he got sent down. Like, why is Jake Lamb here and Danny Mendick's in Charlotte? Like, that doesn't feel right to me.
Maybe the Dancing for Dubs was insincere last year.
They didn't like it. Mature. It's like Nick Madrigal with the 3,000 hits comment. Yeah, the dance. Yeah, too feisty, too confident.
Oh, God forbid.
Yeah, especially under the current regime, eh? All right. Well, I'm stanced out. And all the stats are bad. So maybe what is good? Joe gave us a little bit of optimism. And of course, this division is there for the taking. This isn't the end of the world. But I mean, how many more guys are going to go down who are core players? I mean, Yoan Moncada, you know, I won't say hanging by a thread because he's been kicking ass. I mean, he's been great, especially coming off of a coronavirus season, which actually wasn't terrible last year either, given the circumstances. Abreu's been absent. Grandal has been absent. Nick Madrigal, okay, you know, for sure. Okay. Tim Anderson, if he can stay on the field, projecting for a phenomenal year. Adam Eaton, better than we expected, but that's it. You're mean. Okay, you're mean. You're mean. That's it. That's not even with this starting rotation, which again, nah, that could be a second half thing, knock on something on that. I don't know if this is a division winning team anymore.
Okay. Jake Lamb is going to get the walk-off run in the World Series, and we are all going to be eating. I can't even say it with a straight face. We're all going to be eating our words when he's hoisting a lovely trophy and flaunting his ring.
He'll be our Jeff Bloom.
Am I allowed to talk about the rotation at all? Obviously, that's not the main point. That's not the main thing that we're talking about today, but am I allowed to mention it?
You are, Joe, but you know what? This gallows humor has been so fast and furious. Let's just use this as a spot to break in the middle, and we will allow you to blow more sunshine up all of our collective podcasts, listening and watching asses with talk about the starting rotation in just a second. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, you hear that funeral dirge? It's faint. It's faint. Well, you are watching and listening to podcast number 43, one we never wanted to have because it is the rest in peace, Luis Robert. Pantera has fallen. Again, another jersey will be in the dugout, surely hanging. There's going to be batting gloves worn or Pantera wear, Under Armour wear on everybody's bodies for the rest of the season until somebody else falls down. And as we broke, Super Joseph Rhesus had some optimism about the starting rotation. And let's face it, that's been the bright point all season long. So, Joe, lay it on us.
One of my biggest concerns, if not the biggest for me, was the back end of the rotation entering the season. And obviously, when Carlos Rodon was signed to that 1 year, $3 million deal, I couldn't help but think, okay, that's not that great. I mean, that's obviously inexpensive, but it seems like it's aiming kind of low. And I was vouching for Jose Quintana to come back at the slightly higher price. But obviously, Rodon has been outpitching Quintana by a very wide margin to begin the season. It's still early, but there has been a major gap between those two. Quintana had one of the worst months of his career. Rodon had probably the best of his career. So that's certainly a good thing to see. And hopefully that as for Dylan Cease, who is also started the year at the back end of the rotation. That last start he had was oddly efficient, and he had no walks and 9 strikeouts in the 7-inning shutout. That was very strange to see from him. You know, he kind of fired on all cylinders that game. And that kind of reminded me of that start that Giolito had in early 2019 against Kansas City, that he had to be removed from an injury. It turned out to be a minor injury, luckily, and he came back and was a beast down the stretch of that season. But yeah, that's like short start he had against Kansas City. I think it was in that actually the Tim Anderson bat flip game against Brad Keller. Like I remember watching that game, seeing people's reactions to it, and then seeing like the Baseball Savant like metrics behind it, and I was like, okay, something looks very different about Giolito. I hope this is a long term change from him, and luckily it was. So hopefully, I got a kind of a similar vibe with that last Cease performance. So hopefully, we see more of that soon.
Super Joseph, I am contractually obligated to remind you that Carlos Rodon is the by far highest value pitcher on the White Sox right now, and that could be taken as a good sign or a bad sign, in that the rest of the rotation will catch up and it will be even more dynamite than it is, or that. That performance is somewhat on fumes because Rodon has averaged, I believe, 13 starts per year in his career. So I'm not wishing for it. I hope the guy wins the Cy Young, but it could also be 1/6 of the season mirage. Okay, we're on this hot topic, even though I tried to just douse Joe with cold water there. Let's keep the good vibe going, maybe about the pitching staff or something else to be optimistic about on this day of all days.
I mean, the pitching has kept them in it this far. You mentioned how few of the bats are hitting, yet the White Sox record and run differential is what it is, where it's among the best in baseball. So there's signs for optimism there. You know, the other part of it, frankly, is that we've seen the influence of Tony La Russa in terms of the roster build, and it's obvious that despite his statement of there being depth, they know that there isn't much depth there. And I have to imagine that where previous managers may not have the political clout to say, hey, I want this kind of player on my team, that might actually get to happen this year. So, you know, you do have to look at it with some optimism that it might not be Rick Hahn fishing in the scrap heap like it is in previous years. It might actually be we're getting somebody, and yes, we might have to sacrifice a prospect or two, but you're actually competing for this year.
It's unfair to compare Liam Hendricks and Jake Lamb on every level, of course, but yeah, in a serious go out and you get a guy, maybe fueled by Tony. Yeah, they go out and get the best closer in the game. In a, well, okay, he's a 26th man, so who gives a damn either way? Okay, then they got Jake Lamb. Mixed results, a little frightening, but yeah, you're right. If the chips are down, maybe it's, you know, let's go out and get that guy. Here's the scary thing. Rick Hahn's done pretty well trading. Granted, he's had some pretty good currency to trade with, but he hasn't given that currency away, and he's actually reaped, I think, a lot better back than he's given out, even though, you know, Chris Sale, Prime, et cetera. Are we scared at what that might yield, especially if it's Tony Field? What is the type of guy that Tony is going to want? We're talking like this guy's going to be managing for 5 years, is going to go out and get out there on the market. Is that frightening? I think it's already been alluded to in this podcast, but is that a scary proposition? No commitment from anyone.
Heavy sigh. I really hope he's not around for 5 years. Like, and I will fully admit that I did not, God, I hope not. I will fully admit that I did not go into this optimistic that Tony La Russa was going to do well. I am usually I'm usually not one to manager bash, but I was very pessimistic about it. There have been times where some of the stuff he's done has worked out. Like, as somebody who personally hates when we bunt in stupid situations, like, it's worked out a couple of times. However, there have been a lot more instances where he's fucked up managing wise than he's done well. Like, he's left Giolito in too long. He's put in Foster when he shouldn't have. He didn't call in Hendricks in a high level situation. And like, why are you paying Hendricks all this money for him to sit on his butt? You know, like,
yeah, Colleen, you are citing bunt calls working out a few times, maybe as your primary, if not your only evidence.
The one time.
Okay.
The one. I mean, the no bunts 2020 person, all right? Like, it worked once, okay? But I'm not, like, we don't have a lot of depth right now. We have a lot of injuries. We do have a good pitching staff, but I'm not optimistic that as we get further down the road that Tony's still going to be able to manage this team. And I know that there was an article this morning where it talked about how the clubhouse didn't have confidence in him and it was divided and all of this stuff. But he's been out of the game for 10 years and there's still a learning curve a month in. Like, okay, well, at what point are we going to actually legitimately criticize him as, hey, this was a really bad idea, here's why, and have the White Sox, you know, box scores to back it up.
Yeah, it seems like he has he safely has a year. And to those comments, I don't know if that was the ESPN article or what, but
there was an ESPN one and a 670 The Score.
I always question that stuff because I wonder sometimes how much that has to do with right, especially the position of the Bob Nightingales and the Passons of the world, because their job is to have this vibe, and you know it's like the whole anonymous quote. You can do a lot of crafting when you're writing doing that, and I'm not saying there aren't clubhouse issues. Clearly, you would think there'd be clubhouse issues upon hire, even though they were all swept under the rug because TA bought in a little bit and Giolito was sort of excited. And okay, so I always wonder when it's, you know, just sort of these murmurs. You know, I think sometimes that serves the agenda. It could turn out to be true, and I'm not going to question, you know, the ESPN writer is you know top notch, but sometimes that speaks a lot more to the writer. And I don't even say agenda. It's just the desire to be in the know. It's just curious. So we'll see what more comes from that. Although, of course, Giolito has already essentially thrown Larusa under the bus. So that is definitely strike one in along the lines of the clubhouse disharmony. And you assume it's got to be there. You do assume it's got to be there.
Well, and there was, you think back to 2016 when there was a lot of discord in that clubhouse. I mean, and you know, Adam Eaton and the Drake LaRoche shenanigans aside, there was a lot of anonymous quotes coming out about how the clubhouse was divided, how the culture was bad, nobody was getting along, Todd Frazier was fighting with somebody, and it all turned out to be true. So I think because the team does not leak that often and we don't hear this all the time, I'm more inclined to believe it. Like, this isn't the Yankees. This is not a team that's always swept up in the media. It's not the Cubs. It's not, you know, it's not these teams that there's constant gossip about and shenanigans around them. Like, it's very rare that we hear this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's still nothing. It's still nothing to really grab onto. So it's sort of like a guy saying, well, there should be. So there probably is. And let me see, I'm going to gamble that in 2 weeks, we're going to hear more. And so then I'll turn out to be a soothsayer, but I'm an naysayer.
I think it's just Adam Eaton again causing
trouble. You know what?
With Colleen from earlier. I think that, yeah, you were the one that said that. I think it's just him back again.
He talks about, like, oh, the Diamondbacks had a bad culture and the Nationals have a bad culture and the White Sox. And, like, every time
he goes,
it gets better.
All along.
I mean, yeah. We know. Yeah, I'm like, maybe it's you, Taylor Swift.
Exactly. I was about to say.
So what we're all saying is if we can just get a late 1970s softballer uniforms retro night going and get some lay scissors out just randomly around the clubhouse, we might have the break. We may sort of like, it's like ripping off the bandage. Maybe they need to push that kind of promotion up somewhere in May, so we can just sort of get this all taken care of. And LaRusse's gone. Eaton's, I don't know, he's managing a single A team somewhere, and you know,
I don't know, coaching high school baseball.
Oh my God, that's a red ass job for him for sure. You know that's going to happen. He probably already is. He's managing one by remote control somewhere somehow. I had a really another astute question to ask, but it's escaped me because of the cartoon nature of all of this. So please, someone more opining on the situation at hand.
Melky Cabrera is available.
Jeez.
I already said Chris Bryant. Somebody laughed at me. I'm staying with it.
You know what? The Cubs hate Chris Bryant. I would not be mad if they sent him to us. Like, with how much their team, they hate
it. It's just kind of like would that really happen? Like, it's kind of like the Jose Quintana trade, where it's like, okay, would that ever really transpire?
Listen, they put him in center field today, so they're just like, hey, look at what you can do. Do you want him?
Yeah, we're going to end up with, like, Josh Reddick or something. Let's be real. We're not getting Chris Bryant.
Yeah, the Cubs are saying, hey, if the option is your mean Mercedes in center field, we got Chris Bryant. He's played some outfield.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to end up with, like, Josh Reddick and Jorge Bonifacio or something.
Yeah, I've told you guys, listen, Han is not going to make it. He's got so much currency with the Cubs now. He has this to coast off of and get free drinks off of the rest of his life from Sox fans. He is never going to make another trade with the Cubs. He can't possibly risk, as alluded, the Quintana deal, because and listen, it could happen. If he gives away, I think somebody else mentioned sending the other Tatis and billions of dollars to Colorado to get Charlie Blackman. I could see that happen. He's like, oh yeah, sure, we'll do that. I can do another Shields deal with the Cubs. No. I'd be excited. I would, but
yeah, that's not. The Cubs are going to want like the keys to Fort Knox to give up Chris Bryant.
Yeah. Oh yeah, despite how much like they hate him. Yeah. Look what you put us through. Despite how much they hate him. It's our fault. Look what you put us through. So, give me a tip.
Exactly.
Anything else out there that I mean, Hans said today, I believe, didn't he make some odd, you know, he's got some colorful comments. And didn't he say, you want the juice and then you got to like measure what the squeeze is or something? I mean, it did not seem like we should be excited about the prospects of a trading time real soon. Nothing on the front burner.
No, I mean, there's really not a lot out there. And timing wise, this is one of the worst times for an injury like this to occur, because enough time has passed where all of the spring training, opening day rigmarole that always happens with rosters, that's all finalized. And people now are kind of figuring out where they are until it gets closer to June, July. Yeah. No one's going to want to make a move unless it's somebody that's on an alternate site or in waivers DFA limbo. But there's not a lot happening right now.
We might actually end up with Yasiel Puig, won't we?
There's got to be another outfielder in the Mexican league that might
Melky Cabrera play as well.
Okay, now I've come around. Is this an indictment of the offseason? I feel I'm far too harsh. I don't think I am, but I'm sure somebody's going to say that. The same people who defend people like Phil Rogers are going to say, what are you talking about? What are they supposed to do? They're supposed to anticipate injuries, or how are you going to get Jock Peterson to come to the White Sox, who have World Series aspirations, because he can't be guaranteed to start every game in left field? Don't you just load up your team when you're in the window of contention? And if you talk to 10 guys, so nine say, no, I got to play 162 games if I sign. One guy's going to say, hell yeah, I'm coming to Southside because I want to be part of a winning team.
Mm-hmm. The Dodgers did it. How did the Dodgers get everybody in the world to play for them? They were terrible. They were bankrupt. Major League Baseball took them away from their owners. They are deep in depth. Can we get that?
But also, too, I mean, even going into the season, and one of the reasons why I made my prediction about Nick Rodolfo is that you looked at the outfield, and no, I didn't envision that most of the outfield would be dead by May, but you can't anticipate Adam Eaton playing 162 games when his player history never had that in the cards. You can't predict Eloy playing 162 games where he has a fight with a wall or a net every time he's out in the outfield. Even Robert, you don't know what that's going to look like over the course of a full season. So it made all the sense in the world to have additional depth there. And it's just a combination of not having the foresight to sign guys, even on minor league deals, just to load up the possibilities. And also, it speaks to the draft class for the White Sox, too, where they aren't drafting guys in the later rounds to even serve as bodies that you have on hand just in case these things happen. And that's what the Dodgers are really good at. For all the free agent signings that they They have a ton of draft picks that have worked out just as well. Even the Cardinals, when Tony La Russa was there, that was what made them so dominant, is that they drafted guys that fit roles and fit needs, and the Sox don't have any of that right now.
And for those of you who think Yoel Key Cespedes is going to be the guy who might somehow come and save, he's not even on a roster of a full season minor league team, so I think they're taking him slow. So nothing from the minors to come to rescue. Mike or Adolfo aside, and who knows? You know, at some point they're going to bring somebody. Maybe Jake Berger's going to end up playing left field for this team. I don't know.
It might happen.
Oh, yes. You make a very good point, Tommy, about the drafting history. Yeah, it's been a struggle to identify players who can fill in toward the end of the draft. I mean, I guess Adam Engel is one of those rare pieces who was, you know, he was drafted in the 19th round, and he's been able to fill in at an above replacement level level of play during his career overall. And you know, obviously 2020 was his best season, but he's been kind of an outlier in that sense, as far as, you know, being a useful player at the major league level who they were able to find in the latter portion of the draft. But overall, there's not their drafting history lately has left a little bit to desired as far as like the ability to spot depth pieces there. As far as free agency, I would have liked to have seen more effort from them in the offseason, although I will cut them a little bit of slack, as you know, obviously losing Jimenez and then Robert this quickly into the season. I mean, yeah, you do kind of, you can't really be that surprised when injuries happen and be better prepared than, you know, having Leury Garcia and Billy Hamilton as, you know, the next best options. But it was still a very unlucky circumstance how this all happened, you know, at the end of spring training and then, you know, May 2nd. And then Jock Peterson's name was floated out there. And yeah, he was a guy who I definitely wanted them to get during the off season. But, you know, he's obviously off to a very slow start this year, so I'm not too upset about that one at this moment.
Super Joseph, you're trying to tell me now, I'm not a sabermetrics guy, so explain this to me. You're telling me that the last three high first round position players of Zach Collins, Andrew Vaughn, and Jake Berger all being DHs is not a smart baseball strategy?
I would say it probably is not. Yeah, that is right.
Okay, thank you. Wow, that was good intuition by me. Optimism going forward, this team is, the run differential is extraordinary. It definitely, their run differential betrays their record, which tells me that Tony La Russa hasn't done a good job so far, and the team perhaps has been unlucky. You tell me which it's more. But they're in position. They're in a weak division. Are we uneasy about what we're going to see in the coming weeks? Do we just got to navigate through May and then hope that things get better?
I think we just need to get through May and get them back into where they feel like they can gel with one another and get right back on track. But I think it will be fine once the house is no longer on fire.
It's been on fire for weeks, though.
I know. You just have to somehow get through it and hope that somebody will wake up, whether it be Jose Abreu or just someone that you used to be able to trust. You just have to hope they can wake up and get through May, and then maybe smooth sailing, and maybe the Man of Steel will be back before we know it.
For those of us who don't have a second team, I don't know, like the Mets, we don't have another house to move to. So burning down to the foundation, we got to just pitch the tent, hope it doesn't rain too hard.
If there's one thing you can learn from the Mets, okay, it is that if the bullpen ruins the game for you, not the Mets still. And you can have a terrible outfield and still inexplicably be good when playing the Phillies.
Oh, okay. Well, Ben, if we could just navigate ourselves to that, like maybe get traded to the NL East or, I don't know, something. Yeah, okay, that'd be good. Hey, listen, there's a lot of optimism here. Okay, we're going to wind up podcast number 43. I don't think we've really provided too many solutions for anyone, but there has been some optimism. There is reason for optimism. Having the starting rotation kicking ass is a great foundation piece going forward. Having the Royals be the only team in front of you, keeping you from the playoffs, is a terrific way to be optimistic going forward. So, hey, optimism abounds. Pantera, our thoughts, our prayers are with you. We will look forward to seeing your jersey hanging in the dugout right next to Aloy's. And listen, thanks everybody for listening, reading, watching. Thanks all you guys, Crystal, Tommy, Colleen, Super Joseph. Thanks for joining me on this very difficult evening. But we got another ball game tomorrow night, and it's opening day for the minor leagues as well. So good things coming. Stick with us.